Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. With a sweep of the auto pen last week, President Obama signed the fiscal cliff deal into law. One crisis down, three more looming. In February, Treasury won't be able to borrow more money to pay the bills, the debt ceiling. And in March, a double whammy across-the-board spending cut to every federal program, and the government runs out of all congressional funding. In all this, President Obama says he won't be held hostage to the debt ceiling, won't negotiate under that sword.
One thing I will not compromise over is whether or not Congress should pay the tab for a bill they've already racked up. If Congress refuses to give the United States the ability to pay its bills on time, the consequences for the entire global economy could be catastrophic.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell sounds like he's ready for a fight.
We cannot agree to increase that borrowing limit without agreeing to reforms that lower the avalanche of spending.
Who's got the power here? Who's got the law? This hour On Point, the debt ceiling and the Constitution. Joining me first today from Ithaca, New York, is big constitutional law thinker Michael Dorf, professor at Cornell Law School. His widely read article with Neil Buchanan in Columbia Law Review, headlined How to Choose the Least Unconstitutional Option, Lessons for the President and Others from the Debt Ceiling Standoff. You can link to it. It's a big one at our website, onpointradio.org. Michael Dorf, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Look, we don't know how this is going to play out. The president's trying to play a different game here, trying to sort of move responsibility to Congress and say, it's all on you. I don't even want to talk about it. He certainly has not indicated that he's eager to get into standing on the 14th Amendment to a blow by the debt ceiling. But you and your co-author have looked at this and said, you know what? It may come down to three unconstitutional options here. What do those look like, Michael?
So most of the discussion of the constitutional issue so far has focused on Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, which says that the validity of the public debt of the United States shall not be questioned. Mm-hmm. What Professor Buchanan and I do is to say, let's put that aside for a moment and ask what happens if Congress doesn't raise the debt ceiling and leaves in place what are basically three laws, a law that says you have to spend a certain amount of money, you can raise a certain amount of money in taxes, and you can borrow a certain amount of money. And when you do all the math, that doesn't add up. And so the president can't comply with all three of those laws simultaneously and therefore has to violate one of them. The problem is that violating any of those laws is not just a violation of the statute. It's a violation of the Constitution because it means that he'd be either raising taxes or not spending money that Congress has authorized or borrowing money beyond what Congress has told him he can borrow.
None of which a president is entitled to do under the Constitution.
That's right. Each of those powers is assigned to the Congress. The spending one got President Nixon in trouble when he tried to so-called impound funds, and Congress slapped him down and the courts slapped him down as well. So we say the president would face a trilemma, and the question is, what do you do if all of your options, including doing nothing, are unconstitutional? And our analysis says, well, you try to minimize the damage. And for us, that means you violate the debt ceiling because that would involve the least amount of policy discretion on the part of the president.
You are looking at this very closely. Not everybody is following it so closely. Take us through these three. When you say he's up against perhaps having to try to move spending on his own, unconstitutional, but or tax on his own, or override the debt ceiling. What are the laws on the books that would push him toward those paths?
Sure. So the spending is done by the budget. Congress passes a budget each year. Sometimes they do it in so-called supplementals, which is what we're working off of right now,
yeah,
in which they say, here are all the things you have to spend money on. In addition to that, there are things that Congress authorizes to spend money on, not just on a yearly basis, but so-called entitlements. So you add all of that up and you get a dollar figure, how much money has to go out each day.
What is it in our current circumstance that would lead the president to have to get involved in that?
Well, it's the Secretary of the Treasury, technically, mm-hmm. who's the one who's responsible.
The
but the Secretary of the Treasury answers to the president.
Mm-hmm.
So the appropriation of money is a legislative function. That's what Congress does. But the actual spending of that money, cutting the checks to Social Security recipients, military contractors, veterans, et cetera, that's an executive function. And that's all governed by law. And there's a little bit of wiggle room, which is what Secretary Geithner has been exploiting now. But that wiggle room is going to run out in a matter of weeks. And at that point, the president just won't have enough money to pay the people who are entitled to money under law.
So you're saying the president, one option would be just to grab the power of the purse and cut checks without Congress having appropriated the funds?
Well, it's got to come from somewhere. And the question is, where do you get it? What we're saying is, well, you borrow that money because there is a statute on the books that says the Secretary of the Treasury may borrow such funds as are necessary to pay what's required by law. The problem, of course, is that there's another statute on the books, the so-called debt ceiling, that says, yeah, but only up to the following amount. And that's what gives rise to this trilemma when you add in that the tax rates are set by Congress.
So on this spending front, you're saying they could do it, but it would be blatantly unconstitutional. So I don't know what could do it means exactly. An option would be to raise taxes, raise more money.
That's right. The president could try to raise taxes on his own. Now, my view is that this would be a terrible thing to do, but probably less terrible than cutting spending that's required by law, because it would be easier to administer, although politically suicidal, just given our history. I think you have to say that the president deciding to raise taxes on his own is off of the table. So the things that are on the table realistically are blow past the debt ceiling, or the president go through the budget and decide, you know what, I'm going to pay these people and not those people.
Just unilaterally decide not to spend what Congress has legally passed for him to spend. You say Nixon tried that and was slapped down pretty decisively in the courts.
He was slapped down by the courts, and Congress passed a statute called the Impoundment Control Act that said that if the president wants to not spend money that Congress has appropriated, he's got to ask Congress's permission. But of course, this whole scenario assumes that the president and Congress can't agree on what to do.
That brings you back to the debt ceiling itself and whether the president might just, what are you suggesting, ignore it?
Yeah, I'm suggesting that there are really two ways to do this. One is the president could conclude that the debt ceiling under these circumstances is unconstitutional, either in light of Section 4 of the 14th Amendment or because it requires him to violate these other provisions of the Constitution. And if it's unconstitutional, the general view we have is an unconstitutional law is void. And at that point, the president does have the borrowing authority because there's this other statute. It's Section 3104A of Title 31, for those of our listeners who want to look this up, that says the president can borrow money.
Of course. I mean, you can just imagine world markets looking at that and say, oh, my gosh, the United States can't even decide if it has the authority to issue this debt or not. We're going to charge a heck of an interest premium if we do lend this money that Congress hasn't signed off on asking for.
Absolutely right. There is the possibility that global financial markets take this option off of the table. And unfortunately, Republicans have some ability to manipulate that, right? That is, if Speaker Boehner and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell go on television and say, if the president issues unilateral bonds, we are not going to honor those bonds. Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to raise the interest rate pretty high, too, unless the markets think they're bluffing, which I think is a pretty big gamble. Let me add one other option that's been floated out there originally back in 2011, which seems crazy to me, but, you know, tough times demand crazy measures perhaps, which is that the Treasury could mint what have been referred to as jumbo coins. These are coins worth $2 trillion because there's
a single coin.
Yes. Well, each coin would be worth $1 trillion.
Okay.
So you'd have two of them.
Okay.
The idea is that there's a statute that authorizes the Treasury to mint platinum coins, and it has no limit on how much money they can be for or how much can be outstanding, unlike the other regulations and laws governing the Treasury, which do set dollar limits.
This sounds way off in wacky land, like it's Lilliputians and Gulliver, or I don't know, just crazy.
I agree with you entirely, but the idea is that, you know, this is what you've got. I should say that the reason I think this is crazy, in addition to the fact that I think the markets would go nuts if they saw this happening, is that it's pretty clear that the statute enacting that authority was for commemorative coins, not for solving a fiscal crisis.
I don't think China wants to be handed a little chip of platinum and said, so long about your trillion, or anybody else in the world for that matter. You go back to Abe Lincoln here, who you say faced, he had civil war on his hands, and he struggled with options that all looked unconstitutional.
Yeah, so early in the Civil War, Congress wasn't in session. And there was a real worry that Confederate sympathizing judges were going to order the release of prisoners who were being held by the Union Army. So President Lincoln suspended the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus. He thought he had the authority to do that, but he gave a speech in which he answered critics and said, look, even if I don't have the authority to do this, even if this is unconstitutional, because Congress, not the president on this view, would have the authority to suspend habeas corpus, even if I've usurped a power of Congress, I've done so in order to save the Union. And what Professor Buchanan and I say in our article is that's an argument along the lines that we're proposing, that if letting the Union go to pieces, in Lincoln's statement, would violate his oath to defend the Constitution, then he's got to choose the lesser unconstitutionality. And here that was violating the suspension clause.
Michael Doerr,
so
please stand by. We've
got
big stakes and big issues here. Of course, the White House says the president's not going to ignore the debt ceiling. Maybe it's all moot. Maybe it's not. We're in strange territory. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Constitution and the debt ceiling cliff, if you will, the separation of powers and the battle ahead, how far the president and Congress can go. Lots of talk about this over the weekend. Yesterday on Fox News Sunday, Democratic Congressman Chris Van Hollen of Maryland called the GOP push for more spending cuts without revenue a recipe for more gridlock, he said. On the debt ceiling, Van Hollen said the U.S. needs to pay what it owes.
Newt Gingrich had it right on Friday when he said it was a dead loser for Republicans to threaten to tank the United States economy by refusing to pay our own bills. This is not about future payments. This is about paying bills already due and owing. This is like we get up one morning and say we're not going to pay our mortgage.
Republicans say, come on, there are big issues here on spending. We're trying to get your attention, Mr. President. In response to the president's weekend address, Republican Congressman Dave Camp of Michigan said that just raising the debt ceiling isn't the answer. It's about spending, he said.
Many of our Democrat colleagues just don't seem to get it. Throughout the fiscal cliff discussions, the president and the Democrats who control Washington repeatedly refused to take any meaningful steps to make Washington live within its means.
The president, the White House, has said, his spokesman Jay Carney, that the president's not going to ignore the debt ceiling. But who knows? Yesterday on CBS's Face the Nation, host Bob Schieffer spoke with House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi. Pelosi offered a little advice, maybe, to the president.
If I were president, I would use the 14th Amendment, which says that the debt of the United States will always be paid.
You would just go ahead and do it. You wouldn't
wait
for the Congress.
I would just go do it, right.
She would just go do it. Just pay the debt, she says. Michael Doerr, please stand by there in Ithaca. I want to welcome into our conversation now from Stanford in California, Michael McConnell, professor of law and director of the Constitutional Law Center at Stanford University, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. Michael McConnell, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom and Mike.
It's great to have you both here. Michael McConnell, I imagine you, like many others, have read the Columbia Law Review piece that Michael Doerr and Neil Buchanan have out there saying that, you know, if it comes down to it, blowing past the debt ceiling may be the least unconstitutional option. They cite Abraham Lincoln and his thinking on what to do when there's a real crunch like this. How do you look constitutionally at what the president and Washington are up against, Michael McConnell?
Well, actually, what I think Mike Doerr and others are advocating is not the least unconstitutional option. It's the most unconstitutional option. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 2 could not be clearer. Only Congress has the power to borrow money on the public credit of the United States. The president simply cannot do that on his own. The framers insisted upon this because of an experience of royal abuse of this. And they understood that politicians are short-sighted, that they like to be able to do things like spend now and leave the debt to be paid by future generations. That's very good politics. And so this is a check against that abuse by insisting that the public debt cannot be increased except effectively by the joint action of the House, the Senate, and the President. The President simply can't do it on his own. The argument that the 14th Amendment somehow changes this is, I think, extremely weak. The 14th Amendment does not have anything to do with the default of the United States. What it says is that the public debt may not be questioned, which means that it may not be repudiated. This was added to the Constitution right after the Civil War to protect against the possibility that a new Southern, pro-Southern Democratic majority in the Congress might repudiate the debts that were run up in order to fight the Civil War on behalf of the Union. But repudiating debts is not the same thing as a default. If to repudiate a debt is to declare that it isn't legally owing anymore. That's what the 14th Amendment prohibits. But if you or I were to run up our credit card and be unable to pay our monthly payment,
yeah,
we wouldn't be repudiating it. We wouldn't be saying we don't owe it anymore. It would just be that we don't have enough money to pay it. That's what we're talking about here at worst, and that is simply not unconstitutional. So I think that Mike Dorff's argument and Nancy Pelosi's argument here does not carry any constitutional water.
Michael Dorff, how about it? Never mind the 14th Amendment. Look at Article 1. Spending is the power of the Congress. That's the more fundamental line here. It can't be crossed. And you hear Michael McConnell saying, look, this was a Civil War circumstance, and it's about repudiation, not default.
Well, Tom, let's look at what you just said. Spending is the power of the Congress. Michael refers to the 14th Amendment. Let's put that aside. I'm only talking about Article 1, Section 8. Article 1, Section 8 gives all of the relevant powers to Congress, not just the power to borrow money, but also the power to spend. And the case law is very clear that cutting spending on the part of the president without congressional authority is a usurpation of congressional authority. So he's right.
You mean as a way of getting around the problem of not being able to borrow? If he were to just say, all right, then we won't default. Instead, we're going to radically, immediately cut spending. He can't do that. So what?
That's correct. Take a look at Article 1, Section 7, which is the provision that talks about how a bill becomes a law. And that provision was held as the basis in a case involving President Clinton for saying Congress can't even give the president a line item veto, which is effectively what the president would be doing when he's cutting spending. Well, if Congress can't give him a line item veto, he certainly can't assume one on his own. So I agree with Michael that it would in fact be unconstitutional for the president to issue debt beyond the debt ceiling. But the question is, would it be more or less unconstitutional? His argument is
more or less than the president trying to single-handedly cut spending. But I don't hear Republicans recommending that or suggesting that. They're saying, come negotiate with us. You have to.
I think that's right. But the question is, what happens if those negotiations fail? And everybody has assumed. My argument is as much an argument against the president as it is against Congress. Mm. The president has basically said that if we can't get past this impasse, I'm going to cut spending. And I think that would be a bigger usurpation because he's got to make all sorts of policy choices. Do I cut this program or that program? Do I cut programs just in red states and not in blue states? If I were a Republican member of Congress, I'd be terrified about giving a Democratic president the power to unilaterally cut spending. So the question is not—
Mike McConnell, please.
Mike, you must not have had any experience in Office of Management and Budget or Treasury, because this happens periodically, that the president must make emergency cuts. It happens every time there is an appropriations standoff. It's happened twice, once under President Reagan, once under President Clinton, and there are well-established procedures for paying emergency appropriations and delaying the payment of everything else. By the way, it isn't a refusal to spend. It's a delay in spending. And when there's no money in the till, there is nothing unconstitutional or illegal about the president holding up and not spending money that he doesn't have.
Michael McConnell, let me ask you then, are you suggesting...
If when the president is a policy matter, like President Nixon did, decides not to spend appropriations because he doesn't agree with what Congress has done, that is illegal. It's not unconstitutional, but it is illegal under the Impoundment Control Act. But there is nothing illegal about not spending money when there's no money in the till. It is something that presidents have regularly confronted. They have regularly done it, and I'm absolutely confident that President Obama's people would do exactly the same thing rather than creating an international financial crisis.
So, Michael McConnell, if I may, I want to ask to clarify here, Michael McConnell. Are you saying by that, then, that the Republicans do have a kind of crowbar that goes right to spending? If they will not raise the debt ceiling, then the president will and must and constitutionally can cut spending, and they will have accomplished that goal we heard Mitch McConnell call for?
Absolutely.
Michael Dorff, what about that leverage?
So, in every
previous... Although,
let me
correct that, because remember, it isn't cutting spending, it's a delay in spending. That doesn't actually do any long-term good. The only good that can be done for avoiding our problem is for the president to agree to spending cuts. That is the only way out of the mounting debt problem.
I mean, I get it. That is the Republican push here. I guess what we're talking about is the legal
it's
framework.
Not just a Republican push. It is the plain fact of the matter.
I totally understand, but in this
context, we can take out.
I completely understand. It's just that in this dynamic, that's the priority of Republicans as articulated anyway. The president has put forward his own plans. To a certain extent, they've been sidetracked or, side-railed in the whole negotiation. But so as the law gets brought, if it gets wheeled out onto the field of battle here, if that's the right word, Michael Dorff, what about it? Michael McConnell says, look, this has happened a lot. You're not cutting spending. You're just delaying it. This can be done. It has been done.
Okay. It's never happened where Congress has refused to raise the debt ceiling, because Congress has never done that. Congress has always respected the full faith and credit of the United States. Since 1962, the debt ceiling has been raised 76 times. All of those other occasions on which the Treasury and the President have made emergency cuts have been circumstances in which Congress failed to pass a budget. Here we're talking about a budget that has already been passed, so the authorization already exists. The problem is it's contradictory.
Let's pick it up. Michael McConnell, does that make a difference on that point? Michael McConnell.
Well, first of all, to correct, there's a difference between a budget and appropriations. Congress hasn't passed a budget, even though the Budget Control Act of 74 requires it. The United
States supplemental.
Senate has refused to do that now for the last 3 years, which is in blatant violation of the law. As to the appropriations will be paid so long as there is money in the Treasury to pay them.
All right, but that's sort of closing eyes to the fact that it's empty.
So paid. they have to be strung out. And I can tell you that in 1985, the Reagan Treasury people were prepared to do emergency cutbacks in delaying certain spending. Similarly, the Clinton people, I can tell you because I've spoken with them, talked to them about how they were planning for the debt ceiling crisis. They were going to do the same thing. It is the least unconstitutional option is to delay spending when you don't have the money in the till. To argue that the president has the right to go out and borrow more on his own authority or tax more on his own authority has always been regarded within the Treasury as a non-starter.
Bill Clinton himself, Michael Dorff, seems to have suggested that maybe that's what the president ought to do.
That's right. And it's because it's not on the president's own authority. It's on the authority, again, of Section 3104A of Title 31, which authorizes the Secretary of the Treasury to borrow on the credit of the United States government in amounts necessary by law. Now, that's
I'm sorry, bumps up against... Father, if your father tells you that you can...
Yes, I understand.
You can spend $20...
Yeah.
You can't spend – it is – you do not have authority to spend 25. You're stealing.
But if he also tells you, and you have to spend 30, then he's given you contradictory commands. Michael keeps saying you can't borrow, you can't borrow, you can't borrow, but you also have to comply with the other commands. I'm not saying this is a good solution. I'm not even saying it's a solution. I'm just saying it's the least bad option.
Michael McConnell, could you both hold on for a second here? We've got a lot of callers. I want to begin to bring them in. They're having questions arise as we talk here. Joe in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And I'll come back to you on that point, Michael Dorff. But Joe, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. It's as Mr. Dorff says, the Congress has ordered payment and money's not available. Congress, the national government can always print money as it did in 2008 and 2011. Or if Congress doesn't like that, the executive branch can pay people with checks made out to cash, which are themselves exchangeable as money.
So that's these are sort of versions of the platinum coin. What about that, Michael? Michael McConnell?
Actually, no. The actual printing of dollar bills is not what this is about. It's about how much money the government is obligated. That's the technical financial term, is obligations. And if the government makes out a check to someone, that's a promise to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Congress has authorized that promise to pay, it is not legal. So that is not that doesn't
not an option. Jim,
can I jump in on that?
Yes, Michael Dorff.
It could be legal in principle. That is to say, Congress could if Congress had authorized the printing of dollar bills. The Treasury could print them, give them deposit them in the Treasury, and then you've got money. That's how we create money. The problem
Presto.
Is there's another statute that limits the amount of money that the Treasury can create. So that's off the table for another statute.
Because we're talking very big sums here. Jim in Augusta, Georgia. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Yes.
Guys, I think we need to just break down and have the spending cuts that we have to address and get a plan in place that's going to stop the madness. I mean, last week I listened to 90% of the time discussing raising taxes. I mean, the tax increase doesn't do a bit of good. What does it run us, 3 days?
Yeah, it's very small.
We break down and just face the cold, hard facts that we're going to have to quit spending money right now.
Well,
they didn't discuss it any last week.
We've got it. I mean, you're talking. We're talking law here today. You're talking the substance of it, Michael Dorff. What about that impulse? Just take the medicine. Go to spending, Mr. President.
Well, I would disagree with that claim by the caller and by Michael earlier. You know, most macroeconomists who look at this stuff think that we probably have a long-term deficit and debt problem. But in the short term, the greater threat is that we'll have two draconian cuts. You see that throughout most of Europe, that austerity was adopted prematurely, and that ended up tanking the economy and ultimately was bad for the private sector and for the public sector. So, you know, I read Paul Krugman on this, and I think that, you know, this idea that what we really need now is spending cuts is just madness. You might need long-term spending cuts, but you don't need short-term spending cuts.
Michael McConnell, are you saying do it now? Are you saying do it now, Michael McConnell?
Long-term spending cuts are precisely what the Republicans want. We look at a 10-year window on all of this. That's all the calculations are made on a 10-year window. And the question is, how are we going to bring this mountain of debt down within a reasonable period of time? The immediate cuts do not all have to be next year.
Michael McConnell, Michael Dorff, please stand by. We're going to come back and look at what the court may have to do with this, if anything. The Supreme Court. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Constitution and the debt ceiling cliff, if you will, the separation of powers on the table here, the battle ahead right in front of us now. Michael McConnell in California, lots of response online. Let me put one of these questions to you. Well, I mean, we've got a listener in Michigan who says, remember Dick Cheney's words, deficits don't matter. All right. Duly noted. But Rational Actor says, Congress establishes a debt ceiling, then they pass a budget that exceeds the debt ceiling. Doesn't that mean they just changed their mind and that the debt ceiling no longer means anything? As a constitutional lawyer, what do you say to that, Michael McConnell?
Well, appropriation statutes are one thing, and debt borrowing authorization is quite a different thing. Now, under the Budget Control Act, the Congress is supposedly required to pass a budget that brings those two things together. Unfortunately, the United States Senate for the last 3 years has just simply refused to do what the law requires and pass a budget. If they had passed a budget, the requirement under the Budget Act is that the anticipated revenues, anticipated spending, and anticipated borrowing be brought together something like 9 months before the fiscal year even begins.
But isn't that a different issue from the debt ceiling? Even if you did all that, you could still face a debt ceiling that wasn't adequate to the appropriation.
Yes, but you face it 9 months before the fiscal year even begins, so there's plenty of time to work out and compromise and bring those numbers together.
Fair enough, but behind us now. Here we are, and this institution, Congress, is delivering what looked to our listener like contradictory sort of mandates here. In that case, is it all moot?
Well, it isn't all moot because it is true that they are contradictory. To say that it's like someone having a certain amount in their bank account and then going and running up their credit cards to some amount larger than that. That is a contradiction in a sense, and it produces a fiscal crisis, but it doesn't mean that your credit limit goes up.
Michael Dorf, here's another listener asks, how much faith can we put in Jay Carney's statement about a month ago now, when he said this administration does not believe the Fourth Amendment gives the 14th Amendment gives the president the power to ignore the debt ceiling. Do you think the White House is going to stand by that? I mean, there's the president's personal spokesman right out there, the White House spokesman right out there on the record saying we're not going to do what you're suggesting, Michael Dorf.
Well, there are two things here. One is what Jay Carney said. The other is what he might have meant. What he said is something uncontroversial. Nobody contend, certainly not Professor Buchanan and I, that the 14th Amendment authorizes the president to blow by the debt ceiling. Our claim instead is if it's unconstitutional, then the pre-existing authorization stands. And if it's not unconstitutional under the 14th Amendment, you've got the problem of the least unconstitutional option. Then you have to choose that. But I think you could read Carney as saying we're not going to ignore the debt ceiling, which is more or less what Geithner said in 2011. If they stand by that, I mean, that's a arguably a good bargaining position to take now because it's a way of putting pressure back on Congress where it really belongs for the members of Congress to come together and raise the debt ceiling. Let me say one quick thing about what the previous question was, which is, does the appropriations implicitly repeal the debt ceiling? That's a very astute suggestion. Buchanan and I say, unfortunately, we don't think you can read it that way, because if it does, then the debt ceiling never meant anything if every time Congress passes appropriation measures that require the raising of the debt ceiling, the debt ceiling is automatically gone. That means the debt ceiling was a toothless enactment in the first place. So I don't think that's the right answer, but it's certainly not a completely implausible answer.
Let's go to Stephen in Boston. Stephen, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Just a general question. The Constitution seems to be raised often. I'm wondering if and how this could go before the Supreme Court, if it could be an emergency session or something like that.
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that because we're out in strange territory when you're all the way back to citing precedents from the Civil War and Abraham Lincoln on habeas corpus. Michael McConnell, let's say the White House doesn't mean that they won't go there in spite of the fact that it's, not constitutional. Let's say they accept the Dorf and Buchanan argument here, so we're going past the debt ceiling. Would the Supreme Court get involved, Michael McConnell?
Well, I don't actually think it'll go to the court. It's going to be stopped legally far before that because no one's going to buy the president's bonds because they will not have the full faith and credit of the United States behind them. You would be taking an enormous risk because Congress would be under no obligation to repay them. And indeed, it might even be illegal to repay them, at least to repay them in advance of the $16 trillion of actual public debt that has been authorized under the full faith and credit. The way the bond market works is that people don't buy bonds without assurance of bond counsel that they are going to be repaid. And in the private markets, essentially that means that lawyers are the first line of defense against illegal borrowing, and they won't sign a letter saying that it's legal because they're going to be on the hook. Nobody is going to be willing to be on the hook for bonds that the president issues without the authority of Congress. It would be financial madness.
Michael Dorff, how about it? Maybe that makes all this moot, that the bond buyers' lawyers are going to say no way.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Professor Buchanan and I raise that, and we say if the bond markets don't cooperate, then this is indeed moot. But you have to understand that there's a lot of heterogeneity in the bond market. People buy so-called junk bonds, which have very low ratings. They even buy some bonds that are called sub-junk. That means, of course, a high interest premium. And so that's why what we think of as the least unconstitutional option is also a very expensive option for the government. And, you know, I think we can all agree that it would be best if this crisis were averted. But I think we don't know in advance that there aren't going to be potential buyers out there, although it's certainly a very real possibility.
Michael McConnell, we've talked about the spending side. What about the tax side here? What if Dorff and Buchanan raise, the president turns around and says, well, I'm going to just have to raise some revenues in order not to be awry with the command here, and let's go out and do that. Let's tax as an unconstitutional measure, but another option among several unconstitutional measures.
Well, I think that's equally unconstitutional. The Constitution is quite clear. The president may not tax on his own authority, he may not borrow on his own authority, and he may not spend on his own authority. Now, there is nothing in the Constitution that says that he must borrow all that has been authorized or that he must spend all that has been authorized. It's that he may not spend any more, tax any more, or borrow any more without congressional authorization.
Mark in Lexington, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for the show.
Yeah.
And thanks for your guest. I have a quick question back to the Impoundment Control Act, I believe it's called, and either our court case or the law itself said that the president must ask permission before cutting spending. And I wonder if your guest could clarify whether he has to receive permission or if he can just go on record with asking and then move on with it. And I realize that's parsing words, but this whole discussion is parsing words.
Yes, indeed.
And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Michael Dorff, here we are back to, I'm trying to envision the scale of immediate spending that would be required to actually address the problem. But what about Mark's question? If the president decided to parse it that way, is there some wiggle room there?
So the Impoundment Control Act itself says that if the president wants to not spend money, he has to notify Congress. They get 45 days to act or not. If they don't act, then he has to spend the money. And even during that 45 days, he has to spend the money. That's the act. Now, Professor McConnell says, well, that's just an act. It's not the Constitution. But the truth is that when President Nixon tried to impound funds in the 1970s, the courts, the lower courts, never got to the Supreme Court, but the lower court said even before the Impoundment Control Act that that was unconstitutional for him to do so. And I think we get very strong confirmation of that from the line item veto case in the late 1990s, where Congress says that we want to give the president a line item veto, the ability to cut spending for fiscal discipline. And the Supreme Court says you can't do that. You can't authorize the president to cut spending because he either all or nothing vetoes a law. My view is that this means that Professor McConnell is wrong when he says there's nothing in the Constitution that says the president must spend money. What's in the Constitution is his obligation to faithfully execute the law, including a law that says you must spend. So that's why I think the Constitution is in play here. But I want to say I'm very glad that even though Professor McConnell and I disagree about what the least unconstitutional option is, we are talking about it within that framework, because that was the main goal that Professor Buchanan and I had in writing that article, was to help people see that this is a choice among only bad options. And we may disagree about what the worst or least bad option is, but we at least can agree about that point.
I think from the responses we're getting online and on the air here, people, Americans, see this as a lot of bad options. Michael McConnell, you just heard, we heard Nancy Pelosi saying over the weekend, hey, Mr. President, you know, blow by the debt ceiling. If that should happen, despite what Jay Carney said last month, talk to us about impeachment and whether that would arise in this context, Professor McConnell.
That's an entirely political, not a legal question. Would
it be an impeachable offense?
Presidents are not impeached when their party controls a branch of Congress.
It doesn't mean that the subject wouldn't arise. It doesn't mean that impeachment couldn't be asserted. Michael Dorff, do you see that as a threat here?
Well, so I agree with my good friend Michael McConnell that, you know, we're not really expert in the politics of this, but I will give a historical analogy. So during Reconstruction, Congress passed something called the Tenure in Office Act, which was intended to and did, in fact, limit the ability of the president, the particular president being Andrew Johnson, to fire particular high-ranking executive officials. Johnson defied the act because he thought, I think correctly in retrospect, that the act was unconstitutional in limiting his control over high-ranking officials in the executive branch. And the House impeached him for that, and he survived removal in the Senate by one vote. That seemed to me, and I think the judgment of history, is that that wasn't quite fair on the part of Congress to put the president in a very difficult situation where his view of the Constitution, which I think is correct, says I've got to violate this statute, and then you impeach him for violating it. So I think if Congress were to not raise the debt ceiling, put the president in an impossible situation, and then vote articles of impeachment based on that, most people would regard that as sort of similar to the way history regards what was done to Andrew Johnson, which is it's an unfair position to put a president in.
Are you so sure that Congress wouldn't move for impeachment? I mean, even Democratic Congress members might zealously guard the power of the purse. It's pretty basic.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not an expert in the politics of this, but I'd be very surprised if, as during the Clinton impeachment, this didn't break down along partisan lines. And so that might mean you could even get articles of impeachment voted out of the House, but it would clearly fail in the Senate.
Michael McConnell, we put the real world test to Michael Dorff here. You know, what about from your side, concerned over spending? But I'm looking here at the Wall Street Journal editorial page where opinion is paramount. And, you know, they're saying that this is the wrong fight for the GOP, that they're risking national default and recession, that Wall Street itself will come in like gangbusters, putting pressure on them not to go over this debt ceiling cliff. The Wall Street Journal editorial page writing, you can't take a hostage you aren't prepared to shoot. That hostage being, in this case, I guess, the American or the world economy. Maybe that's a real world moot, you know, mute button from that side, Professor McConnell.
That could well be. I don't know the politics of the thing, and maybe that the Republicans are in such a difficult position. But I will say this, that when you run up to your credit card limit, the very first thing to do is to stop spending more, stop making it worse. And if the president declines to do that, if he insists on just borrowing more and more with no spending cuts, he's going to go down in history as having made a tragic mistake.
What's your guess about where this ends up, Professor McConnell?
I mean, I'm always an optimist. It seems to me so clear that we have to cut spending, and so clear that a compromise along those lines could be made if the president is only willing to do it. If he says that in principle, I won't compromise, that is not just that I don't want to do it, but I refuse even to contemplate compromise because it would be in somehow, I don't know really what he meant by that statement, but that would, that really is so dispiriting to hear, because, you know, President Reagan compromised, President Clinton compromised, President Bush compromised. Compromise is the name of the game in our democratic system.
Of course, that takes two as
well. The House of Representatives.
Yeah, Professor,
the president can't expect simply to be able to have his way on everything.
Professor Dorff, the White House is saying no negotiation at this point. What's your best guess about where this goes, Michael Dorff?
So first of all, they're saying no negotiation based on the debt ceiling
Yes.
with respect to past appropriations. He's not saying I'm not going to negotiate about the shape of future appropriations, future budgets. So I think that President Obama is well within his rights to say that this Congress ought to do what has been done 76 times since 1962, and which is simply raise the debt ceiling. And then you can compromise and negotiate over how budgets for the future get set out.
And
that's
if Republicans won't,
saying.
If they won't let go of that leverage in Congress, what do you see coming, Michael Dorff?
I see a crisis in that case, but I share Professor McConnell's optimism that they'll reach an 11th-hour deal.
Well, we shall see. We're better prepared to understand the constitutional law behind it as we go here. Michael Dorff at Cornell University, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thanks for having me.
And Michael McConnell at Stanford University's Constitutional Law Center. Professor McConnell, thanks to you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, we'll look at Republican former Senator Chuck Hagel and the nomination for Secretary of Defense. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.